Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to my beautiful planet Earth. I want to welcome you to It's All About You, the radio program that is celebrating life, prosperity, and unlimited potential. And I'm your host, I'm Darian Marshall, and as always, I'm excited about it being Monday because I get to do the show, learn some things, meet interesting people, and have fun with my guests. Now, today is no different than any other Monday. My guest tonight is Alan Charles, and he is author of the new book, Walking Out the Other Side, An Addict's Journey from Loneliness to Life. So, you know, the new show was only 30 minutes before it was 45, so I'm going to get right into the show, welcome Alan out, and we're just going to have a little party. So welcome
Hi,
to the
Darren.
Show, Alan.
Hi, Darren. How are you?
How are you?
I am well. I'm very happy to be here. Thanks.
I could imagine. You know, this book is fascinating. You know, what you've been through, and then you're sharing it with the world. I think that's just really beautiful.
Thank you. Now,
you battled your addiction for 24 years. You've lost family, friends, home, livelihood. I mean, any one of those things individually would be horrific. Which in your journey was the darkest moment for you to deal with?
Well, there's been, I've had a lot of highs and I've had some bottoms. I think, you know, without giving too much of the book away, I mean, obviously my book is a memoir dealing about my recovery and as you shared, the 24-year addiction. But there was a piece where I was going through a divorce. I had two young daughters. And as I was going through the divorce and I was in the middle of my addiction, I tested positive in court for cocaine. And the judge came back and ruled that I would no longer be able to see or talk to my kids for 6 months of weekly clean drug tests before I would be able to talk or see my children.
Mm.
And I think that was one of the big bottoms that I hit.
And was that the thing that finally turned you around? I would think that's pretty rough.
You would think that, wouldn't you? But unfortunately, I had a little longer run in me, and it was one of the things that helped, I guess, bring me to my knees finally. But it was probably another 8 months before I was able finally to get sober.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, you share your story of recovery with audiences all over the world now. Has this had a transforming effect on you to be able to share it with the world like that?
Well, the big thing, what I've learned in recovery and as I move along is that by sharing this and putting it out there, you know, my goal is to help others. Hopefully somebody listens or, you know, reads my book that they won't have to go through everything that I've had to go through. My life, and it's, you know, obviously as we spoke, it's about addiction. But for me personally, I grew up with a lot of fear. I lost a dad at 9 years old. I grew up with anxiety, and I learned to live behind a mask. So a lot of those things about being alone and living behind a mask and fear and anxiety, I think is not that uncommon. That, you know, most people that can probably relate to that. So by putting this out there, it was the first time that I was able to show myself. And by doing that, that has helped me to get better, and it's helped me to grow, and I have a better life because of that.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there are million and one things that have helped you to bring your life back into shape. But I have here 5 tools that you use. Matter of fact, I have them written down here. I want to read each one of them off. It's persistence, focus, willingness, faith, and humility. I want to go through each one of them briefly. For you, how was persistence a tool for you?
Persistence, and I'm glad that you hit on all five of those pieces, because those were key components, not just through my recovery. I think they were big in recovery, but through my life, I used them to survive. And I think overall, some are, for me, fortunately, were God-given, and others somehow I kind of adopted. And as I was able to get sober and start recovery and write this book, these five specific things popped up and have been very effective in me being able to get better and become sober and ingrain myself in recovery. So persistence, you know, is for me never to give up, to do things. I was willing to or work to survive no matter what. That's a major piece. I think persistence for anybody, not just, you know, somebody that has an addiction, but never giving up is huge.
Terrific. Okay, now the next one is focus.
Okay, so focus. When I say or use the term focus, that was about paying attention. Especially the recovery part of it is on focusing what the next right action to do is, or whatever the next thing that you can do. So when you're involved in an addiction and you're living behind the mask, I can talk from a personal level. You do anything you can do to continue that addiction. So what seems to happen is you start to lie or you make excuses. And focusing in and paying attention and doing that next right thing is going to drive you into the right direction.
Terrific. Oh, this is very good. Okay, now the next word is willingness.
Okay, so willingness. Willingness is, I would say, from a recovery standpoint, is to go out of your comfort zone. And, if somebody, you might not think you need help, or you might feel you need help, but you don't know what to do. So you go out of your comfort zone. You become willing to take advice, to hear suggestions, and even if you're going to make mistakes, there's just a willingness to move ahead and to listen, because somebody might know different than you, and it might end up helping you.
I love it. Love it. Faith.
Okay, so a couple of different kinds of faith. Faith in something outside of yourself, and people that are familiar with recovery or spirituality. I think everybody, you don't have to be spiritual, but you would hope that you have a faith. Faith in what's going on around you. Faith in what you believe in. But another key part of faith is to believe in yourself. Listen to that inner voice. I think that if somehow you can connect to an inner voice inside, from my personal experience and everybody that I may have shared this with, that I've spoken to about this, we all have an inner voice that talks to us. And usually that voice, probably usually is not the great term, I would say 100%, that voice talks to you. It tells you the truth. If you can hear that inner voice inside and listen to it, that's going to help guide you and help you make some right decisions.
Terrific. Now, how does humility, that's the last word I have in my little list, how does that fit into all of this?
Okay, so humility, part of humility is being able to ask for help. It's almost being a tad humble, showing that you don't know the answers, that being grateful for what you have. But humility is a way to live, to put yourself out there and ask for help, that we do not know the answers. And I wanted, and it kind of combines all the other four things that by being humble and having some humility, asking for help, that you will be guided in the right direction.
So it's amazing just hearing you talk. You don't realize how much self-work is involved in this, in recovering. I mean, this is serious work. But I guess it's worth it, huh? It's worth it.
Well, you know, you hit on a point. It is a lot of work. But you know what? Every level of person, it's different for everybody. We're all different. We all come from different places. Unfortunately, the disease doesn't hit any special person. It's all races. It's all nationalities. Everybody is the same out there and is vulnerable to the disease of addiction. But the thing is, in my instance, I never learned a lot of these things. Some people are fortunate that, you know, they'll grow up in a household with loving parents or a parent, and they're taught certain things of how to live, and, you know, they understand about persistence or focusing or faith or, you know, even humility. But for me, those weren't things that I learned growing up. So when it got to the point that, you know, I was facing my addiction, I really didn't know how to live. And with what a recovery program did for me is it taught me how to live. And it was a lot of work before I was able to get better. And it actually took years in recovery for me to feel comfortable in my own skin to be able to live and to do the next right thing for people.
Wow. How does your story provide hope for addicts and the loved ones?
Well, we've touched on my story. And I guess, you know, if somebody has a 24-year addiction, there's a lot of downsides. And my down kept getting further and further. And, my story deals with being in institutions, being inpatient rehabs 4 times, being in 15 outpatient programs, many overdoses, an experience where I was driving in a car where I'd been up for a couple of days and crashed into a wall and was pronounced dead at the scene of the accident. And fortunately, it was an emergency vehicle behind me, and I was intubated and brought back to life. So, you know, my story at times was horrific, and I've been fortunate to be given many chances, but there's no right or wrong reason to get better. I've been very fortunate. So, you know, to answer your question, my story, I've hit bottoms that hopefully not many people have to hit. And my story shows that no matter who you are, you can't be too far gone that recovery is a possibility. I was in and out of AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, and the CA program, Cocaine Anonymous, and where people would say, Alan, you're just not going to make it. And I hear people talk about. But then after fortunately having, and I just celebrated 8 years of recovery on December 8th, I just have tremendous gratitude. And what I've heard is if I could get better, anybody can get better.
Man, that's something to be really proud of. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's oh boy, that's really something. Yeah, I really wish I had your book years ago because, you know, my brother, he's recovering. Well, he's doing great now. He's married, kids and all that stuff now. But
wonderful.
Oh, yeah. We went through years of all kinds of craziness. We laugh about it now. You know, he's doing great. We all sit around and laugh at some of the funny things that happened. I remember, just so even for the listeners to understand how it can be sometimes, you know, the addiction, I personally don't know, but he was telling me how it's like it's almost like a demon calling you. One day I remember I was in the kitchen with my mother, and she was doing a neighbor's hair, and we saw what we thought was a big black bird fly by the window, right? And I said, Mom, did you see that? She said, yeah, what was that? And then it went back the other direction, and we got a little nervous, and we thought it was a crow or something. Then we opened the curtains, and it was my brother upstairs. He was trying to steal one of the TVs. He had it on a rope, and it was swinging past the window.
Wow.
And we thought it was a bird flying back and forth. But it got that bad. You know, we laugh at it now, but at the time, it was like, wow.
You know what? You just gave a great example, and you brought up a good point. This disease, and it is a disease,
mm-hmm.
once it gets you in its grips, you will do anything and everything to get your next drug or fix.
Yeah.
You lose all choice that you have, and many people out there don't realize, I happened to be addicted from the first time I did cocaine, the first line that I did. I had anxiety and a knot in my stomach from the time I lost my dad when I was 9 years old. And first time I tried cocaine was when I was 24 years old. And that first time I did the line, that knot disappeared. And I was like, oh, my God, where has this stuff been my entire life? And at that point, I lost all control to make any decision, and what drugs do, it's been shown where it changes from the very first time, it changes your brain chemistry, and you're playing Russian roulette. You know, some people are fortunate and they can go and use recreationally and they stop and maybe they don't have that addictive gene in them, but there are others that the very first time they can go out and use, and you don't know where your life is headed after that. You might be the one that has a 24-year addiction, and lucky if you can make it through.
Wow. It's amazing. If you're just tuning in, I'm having a great conversation with Alan Charles. He's the author of the book, Walking Out the Other Side, An Addict's Journey from Loneliness to Life. And to find out more information, visit him at walkingoutheotherside.com. And I'll mention that a couple of times throughout the rest of the show.
Thank you.
Something just popped in my head, and I forgot that quick, but maybe it'll pop back later. Okay, well, let's continue on.
Sure.
Now, after you triumphed over all of these obstacles, you believe your life is a miracle. Now, of course, I know the answer is yes, but why do you believe that? I can hear it from you.
Well, you know, I don't have any other answers why I happen to get so lucky. You know, I shared with you the car accident story. There were numerous overdoses. I've had so many battles over addiction that I mean, even deep down, I believed in myself and I believed that I can get through anything, which kind of was my motto. But this disease and this addiction, there were times where it just seemed like the next step was going to be death and that I just had no control over what I was doing. So with that said, I don't know why I was spared, and the only thing that I could believe is that it's a miracle that I was able to find recovery. But again, using those five tools, and one of them is the persistence, I never stopped doing the things that I was told despite being called by the drug and continuing to use. I would go out on binges, and then I would, when I finally was able to stop for a day or two, I would pick myself up and I would go to an AA or CA meeting where I would call and ask for help. And, you know, it was probably hundreds of times where I would go back to a meeting after relapsing the day before because I really did deep down want to live.
Yeah, because what are the odds to be in an accident and have an emergency vehicle right behind you?
I couldn't even calculate the odds with everything that's happened to me, but they seem like they'd be pretty astronomical.
I mean, really? It's like an angel sitting right on top of you, you know?
Yeah, no, I've been very fortunate.
Your rehab counselor said it's not your fault, but it is your responsibility to get better. Do you think that all addictions are not the fault of the individual? How do you feel about that whole thing?
You know, that's interesting. I totally believed what the counselor told me. So what he meant by that was, in my instance, I had a lot of trauma at home. As I shared, my dad died at 9, and unfortunately, my mother went into a depression after my dad died. She was left with 2 little boys. I was 9. My brother was 7. And she wasn't equipped to deal with 2 young children and be a widow. And we didn't have any money. And then, unfortunately, through some situations, my brother developed a mental illness. And my mother basically emotionally abandoned me at that point. So I faced a lot of things on my own, and there was trauma in the house. My brother started to act up, so there was a lot of violence. And, you know, if somebody, if they want to read my book, they'll read all about my childhood. But you know, as I'm sharing, there was a lot of violence and a lot of things that were traumatic in my household. So what the counselor was explaining was, after all of things happened, when I tried cocaine the first time, you know, I was addicted, and everything that happened to me, it wasn't my fault that I happened to be struck with this disease. But by knowing this and seeing what I've gone through, and now that I have the awareness of it, it's my responsibility to take the steps and to work a program and to find recovery and to do all these things that that I need to do to make myself better. So it absolutely, I need to take responsibility for the people I hurt and the things that I did, whether it was the, you know, I used cocaine, but I did some horrible things to people and hurt people, and I lived in a way that wasn't admirable, and I need to take responsibility for all that I did, and to turn around my life and to make things better, and that's what I've done.
Beautiful, beautiful. I got a million questions, and the time is flying. I wanted to touch a little bit on, aside from this amazing story you're telling me, you've had a really interesting life. I mean, you were somewhat of a celebrity. I mean, you were hanging out with Barry Manilow. Tell me a little bit about some of that.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up, because we don't want to just show people. I mean, you know, my story is traumatic and there's some horrible stuff around addiction. But part of the exciting part of my life and book is I've had some major ups and successes. So I loved baseball. I grew up, I was a good baseball player. I played baseball at the University of Miami and then later transferred to the University of Tampa, where I graduated from. And I was fortunate enough to play professionally. I was signed by a scout that worked with the Houston Astros, and I was sent down to play professionally in the Dominican Republic. And at the time, back in 1983, I played in their major leagues. From there, after I had some arm problems, and you know, that was as far as I got in professional baseball. Then I had I grew up going to Yonkers Raceway, which is a harness racing track. And it was a sport that I fell in love with. And then in my middle 20s, I went through a process where I became a professional harness racing driver, drove at some of the biggest racetracks, which happened to be here in the Northeast. I live in New York City, and the two most renowned racetracks possibly in the world are the Meadowlands and Yonkers Raceway. And I drove and beat the best drivers in the world driving racehorses. And then, as you mentioned, I had the opportunity to sing with Barry Manilow at Radio City Music Hall. Huge fan of Barry Manilow's growing up. Fell in love with his music when I was 15, and being, I guess, a jock or a sports guy, liking Barry Manilow's music wasn't very popular for somebody in my genre, so I was teased mercifully. And after seeing him in concert many times, he happened to pick me out of the audience, and I happened to have a premonition before the morning of the concert, and ended up being called on stage to sing with him. So that's a another major highlight of my life.
Wow. Boy, it just goes on and on. I meant to say earlier, your mother is absolutely gorgeous. I'm looking at these pictures. She looks like a movie star.
Well, thank you. She did do a lot of modeling. She was a professional model back in the 50s, early 50s, through I guess till she had me in 1959, and she was a runway model and worked for some major studios. So yeah, I've heard my mom was a pretty good looking woman.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. Oh my God, the time is just flying. I have to ask this: where did the title come from for this book? It's perfect. I think it's a great title. How did you come up with that?
Well, I appreciate you asking that. After I've had about 3 years of recovery, I was just sitting down thinking about things, and I thought about writing a book. And finally, I had a pretty good grasp for recovery. I mean, you never have it. It's something that you have to continue to work on, and I'll be doing the rest of my life and practicing everything that I did to get me better in the beginning. I still do all the same things now. But I just, for a brief moment, it's like, wow, I finally am on the other side of this, and just kind of thinking that way, and it's like, wow, I really did walk out the other side.
Wow. Well, you did it all right. My goodness. So what plans you have for the book? Are you going on a speaking tour with it? Are you already on one?
Well, I mean, I have shared, and, you know, as you've spoken, I've shared around the country. Fortunately, I've started to pick up some traction. I've done some radio shows, and we've been in some papers, and the book has gotten some quite good reviews. I'm looking to leverage the book and to speak, to help, to give back, to talk, maybe go down talking, helping adolescents to maybe stop before they start, so that they don't have to go on this addiction and have to deal with it. I'm looking for some traction. I'm looking to hope to have the book my speaking be picked up maybe in some national media. But I do have a publicist, and we're moving along. Book sales have been quite good so far, but we have a ways to go, and I'm just looking to get my message out there.
Terrific. Well, I believe in it. I got 60 seconds. I just want to say thanks so much for joining me on this show. I mean, I know you're a busy guy, and I really appreciate it. I have a show, and I'm a show host, but I need guests to make the show work. So I really appreciate it. That was really nice of you.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's a pleasure to be here with you.
Oh, terrific. And again, everybody, the book is called Walking Out the Other Side, An Addict's Journey from Loneliness to Life. And my guest tonight was Alan Charles. And go to www.walkingouttheotherside.com to get more information about all the exciting things that Alan is doing. So you've been listening to It's All About You, the radio program that is celebrating life, prosperity, and unlimited potential. And I'm your host. I'm Darian Marshall. I want to thank you for being with me, and I look forward to being with you next week on Monday. And so it is.